Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Along with me is my co-host, Chris Stevenson. How you doing, Chris?
Good. How you doing, Carrie?
I am good. Before we go any further, y'all, I want to talk a little bit about my co-host because I'm glad to have him on board because he has such a lengthy bio that he won't toot his own horn, but I will. Chris is a syndicated columnist for several black newspapers and websites, primarily the Buffalo Challenger and the Buffalo Bullet. If you want to check out some of Chris's articles, you can go to thebuffalobullet.blogspot.com. Chris is probably going to kill me for doing that, but I just had to put it out there.
Oh, you sounded fine. Did great.
All right, then, Chris. Chris, it was a big week in news, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Wow. Some of the stories we're going to talk about today is like the Tiger Woods story, the Alabama evangelist found guilty on all counts. We're going to talk about the Trenton, New Jersey story where the 7-year-old was gang raped by the five men, and those 29 killed in that mine blast in West Virginia.
Yes, yes, yes. The West Virginia thing is a horrible, horrible story. I don't know what to say. My condolences goes out to the families of those people.
Well, you want to jump right in on the West Virginia story?
Well, yeah. So see, the whole thing, what I've been understanding, we got in the West Virginia story.
Okay.
Because, you know, my thing about mines, okay, first of all, anyway, coal mines, diamond mines, whatever,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going no 500 feet, 1,000 feet underground for nobody.
Right.
Okay.
I understand that. You know, and you notice most of the people going in there didn't look like us.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and my that's always been my take on when it came to mines is even if I was one of those guys that grew up in one of those West Virginia towns and mining was the only thing going, that was the only way to get a job, I'd enlist for Iraq or Afghanistan. Okay, and where it's safe. Okay.
Listen to you. You know what? Before we go too far, just in case anybody hasn't heard this story, we're going to give them a recap of what happened with this story. 29 dead in a West Virginia mine blast. It's been the worst in U.S. coal mining history in 40 years. It appears that a huge underground explosion blamed on methane gas killed 29 miners, and this is the worst since 1984. They all work for the Massey Energy Company, which has a spotty safety record. Federal inspectors fined the company more than $382,000 for repeated serious violations involving their ventilation system and equipment. It appears that like three people from the same family died in this accident. And I think the governor of West Virginia or Virginia made it, or said it the best. He said, we did not receive the miracle we prayed for. So, Chris, you know, I don't know what to say about this because I don't think there's any unions up there, is it?
I don't think so. Not that I've heard of. Here's the thing. Because you summarized it very well, the basic story. They're of their own. That Massey is owned by a guy by the name of, I think his name is Don. I'm trying to think of the name. Oh my God!
I heard them call his name on the news. I forgot it myself, but he was.
Yeah. But he's a piece of work.
He looked like he was a mafia cat or something. He just had this Tony Soprano kind of image going on that. You know, you can't touch this. I mean, no matter what I do, I'm not touchable.
His name is Don Blankenship.
Okay,
so,
okay.
That's a mafioso type name, but he's not a gangster. He's a bean counter. He's a CPA.
Oh.
Actually, a certified public accountant also.
Okay.
But he's the CEO of that company, and several years ago, that mine was put on notice. Massey was put on notice to make improvements.
Hmm.
And he came out and said, this is his thing, he sent a letter throughout all the people, the officials in Massey, saying whatever improvements or you guys are starting to make, or whatever you're trying to rebuild,
mm-hmm.
Stop doing it and redirect all your efforts to just mining.
Okay.
So he's basically telling them, who cares about the improvements? Just go ahead and keep mining.
Well, then that goes to the question, then who's to blame then? Is it the miners for not sticking up for themselves? Is it the owner? Or is it the regulators? I mean, somebody's got to be blamed for this.
Well, somebody's got to be blamed for it. Look, the major blame is the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the miners, you could say the miners could make a you know, they could have made a better case for themselves. But, you know, these guys, these are old Southern boys, you know what I'm saying? Poor, as we call underclass, as we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I understand being in the trucking industry. I understand that. We tried to get a union going when I was driving fuel tanker years ago. And guess who resisted? The old guys.
Okay. They don't want any change. They just want to keep their jobs and, you know, leave all that other stuff alone.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the intro, so I understand the mentality to a certain extent. Also, the issue with this mine, this particular mine, this was the known as the Upper Branch Mine.
Mm-hmm.
This is like 30 miles south of Charleston, all right? And they have a lot of trouble with methane and dust. This is what triggered the explosion. These are the two elements that triggered the explosions anyway. And they had the same type of explosion in the in a mine in West Virginia years ago. And so it's not like they didn't know about these things. And so this was the worst mining disaster since 1968, back in the Farmington, West Virginia, mining explosion. And 78 men lost their lives in that one.
Wow.
All right. So like as you said before, we had 29 lose their lives here. I would take my chances with landmines in Iraq before I go under a coal mine 1,000 feet and be an explosion there, because at least with a landmine you can see the sky. You can see you're out in the open.
Looks like to me you can't win either way. You might die from cancer from what you're inhaling. Or if that doesn't kill you, a blast may kill you.
See, that's another thing, too. Yeah, you're going to die slowly anyway.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are under these mines, like, months at a time. Okay, so, you know, it's a terrible way. But I think there was a mine explosion in China also, I think, maybe a week or two ago.
And I think they executed someone because of that. Some official I read. Oh, how did that story go? There was an official that didn't do what he was supposed to do, and they executed him for that. So obviously, China is not as lax as we are with their regulations and how they enforce the laws when things like this happen.
Yeah. And they one of their mines is very advanced.
Mm.
This is spread. They said even if that this mine is designed to trigger as soon as the methane is in the air. It gives off a warning, and the workers just calmly walk up to the surface. Okay, so it's a warning very well in advance. So you can do that here. And obviously, this guy here, Blankenship, doesn't believe in any of that.
They kept talking about going to a certain chamber, but I'm sure the chamber wasn't every 15 feet, so these chambers may not have been as easy to get to as they led us to believe, you know, that they were hoping that these four guys had reached the safety chamber, and in that particular chamber would be certain safety equipment that would be helpful to them in sustaining them until someone could get to them. But I didn't get the impression that they were every 15 feet.
Well, when there's an explosion, who can tell?
This is true. It's so dark and dusty and debris is everywhere. You're exactly right.
Everywhere. The safest place to be is in the chamber at all times, for that matter.
True.
You're going to alleviate all doubt. But, of course, nobody's going to allow that to happen.
Well, you know what, Chris? I think a big wrongful death lawsuit is coming. What do you think?
I think so.
Yeah. I think the families, you know, for whatever reason, they did these jobs, they still were entitled to do it and be provided with a safe environment. And it seems like Massey was just negligent on all fronts with that. So I hope they bankrupt the quote. Uh-huh.
Neglecting means a certain amount of forgetfulness.
So it wasn't just neglected, huh?
Yeah, he purposely overlooked it.
You think so?
So he should be penalized to the maximum. And those lawsuits, they should come flowing, okay, because those people deserve it. You have to, like I said, you have to be a brave person. It takes a special person to mine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, so if especially for such bitter-minded and unwilling people, I'm not seeing it.
I agree. You know, to the prayers, our prayers go out to the people of West Virginia because we know they were hit hard with this mine accident, and we just pray that, you know, that God be with them. We're going to move on, Chris. You know what, to a lighter note, technically a lighter note, Tiger Woods' story was all over the news this week, Chris. I mean, all over the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's start out by saying, We'll start out by the fact that he was at the Augusta National Golf Course for the first part of the week. He was doing some practice swings, and then he held a press conference. Looks like he handpicked who he was going to allow to be at the press conference, but one person who was not present was Dwight Elam. Looks like, and also the Golf Writers Association of America decided they were going to boycott it. They said they were not happy with how Tiger had so much control over what could and couldn't happen there. So they just said, you know, count us out. But looks like he said some things.
Really?
Yeah. Say what?
Really?
Oh, yeah, they did. They said count us out. But Tiger did say some things during the press conference that we all found interesting. He said he had spent 45 days in rehab. He said he was a better man for it. He said he would continue his treatment. He also mentioned that Elon would not be attending the Masters. That's no shock to us, I don't think. And he said it's not about the championships anymore. It's about how you live your life. He also said he wants to help people that can't help themselves, but he didn't elaborate on who he was talking about. So we're not sure what group he's going to help this time. And then he also said that he was going to win this thing, meaning the Masters.
He's off to the best start he's ever been in the Masters. That includes the years that he won it. So
you know what?
And
sometimes adversity, you know, propels people. So you think that's what's going to happen this time?
I think that's what's going to happen. You know, he's not leading it right now, but he's very close. It's like second to third place. So those other guys are going to have to keep up that fire consistently, and that's very unlikely.
You think so?
He's proven that he can do that. And what I admire most about Tiger as far as his playing golf is that he is very mentally tough. He's got that – when it comes to – you know, he's like Michael Jordan when it comes to that.
But you know what? You really can't say that because we haven't had an opportunity to see that, because this is a man who has a yacht that he's named Privacy. So in the past, we really didn't know Tiger Woods. So now that we're seeing this other side of him and he's been in the news, you know, for months now, we don't know how well he's going to do under pressure, do we?
Yeah, we don't.
Okay. So he's got a big Tiger fan here, looks like. You know, I don't know. We'll just have to see, because I think, you know, some of the fans received him well, but I think some of his opponents aren't happy with him. I think they're just, like, tired of all this, you know, publicity on Tiger, and they just want to get to playing the game of golf. That's what it seems like.
His opponents are making more money because of Tiger. He's the one that upped the ante for golf, so they may as well just be quiet, okay? The simple fact is the game is not nearly as interesting without him. As it is when he's playing.
That sounds like the Venus and Serena argument. Okay. But you know, still, though, they have a right to say, you know, let's get to the game. You know, I can understand, like, you know, that's distracting from what they're trying to do. And so they're just saying to people, okay, enough already. And I can understand that.
You can.
I can understand that. Listen, they still going to make their checks, but at the same time, they would like a little of the time from the media to come toward them and just not let it all be about Tiger. But, you know, Tiger was also in the news again later this week. Tiger's new ad for Nike came out with his dad. They said Tiger Woods said nothing in the latest Nike ad. Instead, everyone else is talking about the commercial in which the only voice heard was Tiger's dead father, Earl Woods. Some of the things that were said in that commercial was he said, you hear Tiger's dad saying, I am prone to be inquisitive to promote discussion. He says, I want to find out what your thinking was. He says, I want to find out what you're feeling, what you are feeling. And then he said, last but not least, did you learn anything?
I remember that. Yeah, that's the main thing. Did you learn anything?
Doesn't that sound weird?
The look on his face tells me he learned a lot, but it may not be what we wanted him to learn. Okay?
But don't you think that was kind of tired, if you, for lack of a better word, to use your dead father to? I think somebody put it best on the internet. It said using your dead father to help his personal comeback and sell Nike goods shows he continues to reach new lows. I think I'm entitled to agree with that guy.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because there's something very significant about that. First of all, having known about Nike way before any of us knew about Tiger, Nike is they started from the streets. They started off selling sneakers. They're brand of sneakers to kids at the playgrounds right from the back of a st- station wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Phil Knight who basically did that, promoting those. And, you know, from the ground up, all right,
mm-hmm.
They got involved in most of the school kids, got contracts with coaches and everything. I mean, eventually that Nike swoosh began to appear on almost every uniform in sports,
mm-hmm.
Okay, even overtaking Reebok. I saw all this happen with my own eyes. So Nike does everything deliberately. Nothing happens by accident with them.
You know, and I'm entitled to agree with you because one article said it like this. It said this came on the eve of his return to the competition, competitions at the Masters, 4 months after the sex scandal that interrupted his career and tarnished his billion-dollar image. I think before any of that, Tiger would never have used his dad's image that way.
No. You can bet that there have been some meetings as of the last few weeks between Tiger and Nike.
And you're thinking they're saying, we're going to get our money's worth before this whole ship sinks.
No, they don't know. They know that a ship's not going to. Tiger's back in the golf right now because of Nike, most likely.
Hmm.
They don't see his ship. You think it's the PGA. The PGA needs Tiger. Tiger is almost a billionaire. He no longer needs to play golf. He no longer needs to work, period. He doesn't have to do anything anymore.
But, you know, there were a bunch of sponsors that jumped off ship when this whole thing broke. I mean, you know, they said, listen.
Which was, to me, very premature, very silly.
You can't call it silly. I mean, these people, I mean, with it, we're in a recession, and they didn't know how the whole thing was going to turn out, so they had to protect their interest, didn't they?
They could have waited a little longer.
You think?
Yeah.
But, but you're talking about their money and not your money. You know, and they probably had stockholders that were concerned. What do you think?
I'm more concerned with Ben Roethlisberger, who's been charged with rape, and none of his sponsors have left him. I haven't heard of any of his sponsors leaving him. Tiger didn't commit a crime. Understand this.
Well, see, but you know what? When you really want to dig deep and get to the bottom of it, when you remove all of the debris, what you find underneath. All of that is a black man, a rich black man, took advantage, they're looking at, of a bunch of white women. I think when you get through with it, that's really where everything bottoms out at.
Right.
And so this is still America, Chris, and we know that's how things are looked at.
Right.
You know, so I think that, you know, because Vanity Fair, you know, knowing that Tiger was a married man and all these mistresses he had, why did they put four of Tiger's mistresses in Vanity Fair? They glammed them up and then had them dish dirt on Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these women were dishing dirt and calling them cheap. I mean, they're saying this guy's a billionaire, but he never really spent any money on them. I think one lady said
Why do you think he's on his way to being a billionaire?
Well, you know what? I mean, I'm sorry. I agree with you, with that, but I think at the same time, you know, one lady said the only thing he ever bought her was one of those wrap sandwiches at Subway, and I wanted to say to her, look, I wouldn't have even told anybody that. I mean, so, you know, these are some of the things that they're saying about him in Vanity Fair. So I'm not sure, you know, why that magazine having the image that it has.
I'm not going to be playing any violins for any of those women. You know, they were used. They went to Tiger with the mission. He went to them with the mission. For the longest time, he was winning, but until he got caught by his wife, you know, he lost. Okay, it's all part of the game. You know, what I'm saying it's all part of the game. They're making money off of now. Okay, there's one of them, at least one of them, that she's got tons of text messages that she's. She's trying to sell. I think she's been offered hundreds of thousands for them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, funny sounding stuff. Really, really, really funny stuff.
I haven't seen the text messages yet, so I can't weigh in on those. I tried to find it, but I couldn't find it on the internet.
Let's say this. Anticipate yourself finding out more stuff in the coming weeks because these ladies are going to be more and more revealing gradually.
Especially if he wins the Masters.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. You know what? I think what I'm really concerned with, though, is they're starting to name names and drag other people into it, which is further going to hurt the wife because they're saying things like Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley, you know, may have, you know, basically aided in making this guy the monster that he turned out to be. And they're also naming part of his camp as people that arranged some of these meetings. So, you know, I mean, it just never ends with this saga. It just keeps getting dirtier and dirtier.
Well, this is the first time, this is going to be the first Masters tournament where Tiger is not going to date the Masters' daughter, okay? So he had a new meaning regarding this tournament.
Okay, now.
Oh, yeah. That's all I have to say. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to go any further on that one. I mean,
okay, but you know what? The National Enquirer, who has not been wrong so far on Tiger News, said that the wife, Elin, may be pregnant, 4 months pregnant, in fact, with their third child, and that that may be the only reason that she is still with Tiger.
Well, you know, if I remember the first time the National Enquirer was right, in my eyes, was when they reported the Jesse Jackson scandal, when he had a mistress and he had gotten her pregnant. She may have already have given birth or whatever. And they show pictures of him, and Jesse Jackson was actually counseling Bill Clinton over his sex scandal, you know. And, you know, so every now and then, I guess they say a broken clock is right twice a day, and that's the National Enquirer. This is one of their broken clock moments, you know.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I think it's what it is because, you know, they're usually doing the, you know, woman gets pregnant by space aliens or something like that, you know, like a lot of these typical supermarket tabloids, you know, interesting but amusing stuff.
Wow.
You know, but when it comes to Tiger, you know, every now and then they have a real honest reporter or whatever, or two working there, whatever the case may be. But I'm not going to doubt them on this one.
Okay. I'll go with that. Listen, Chris, we got some callers on the line. Listen, if you want to weigh in on what we're talking about, you can reach us at 347-850-8390. That's 347-850-8390. We're going to go to the line, 217-819. We want to see what you got to say.
How you doing today, Ms. Carrie?
Hi, welcome to Center Stage. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. I'm loving the show.
Good. Say hi to my co-host, Chris Stevenson.
How you doing, Mr. Chris?
How's it going?
I'm going, doing all right.
What story do you want to weigh in on?
I want to weigh in on this Tiger Woods story.
Now, tell me what you think. Well, first of all, tell me who you are.
I'm saying Drill. I'm saying, but then I'm saying my friends called me and said, no, not him.
Okay, no, not him. Okay. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Well, tell me what you think of the Tiger Woods story.
Well, I'm saying this Tiger Woods story, I'm saying, is just getting out of hand a little bit. You know, everybody, I'm saying, is coming down on this man, for doing that he did to his wife. You know, I'm saying, there's people, I'm saying, other people in this world that, I'm saying, have done, I'm saying, worse things than he has. You know, it's just a way for the media to get, I'm saying, a little bit of attention because, I'm saying, they needed something to talk about. You know, you have to actually, I'm saying, look at, I'm saying, Tiger, I'm saying, Woods and know who Tiger Woods is to understand, you know, I'm saying, the things that he's done. It's like he cheated on his wife. You know what I'm saying? As people saying, we look at that and saying, yeah, he did something morally wrong. You know what I'm saying, as far as that. Now all these women that's coming out saying that they slept with him, saying that this and that and this, and they didn't get anything from it. But at the same time, you knew he was a married man. I'm saying when you stuck yourself out there and saying you started talking to this guy. So you can't sit there and look at it and say, like, oh, he just did us wrong and he was talking to me like this and he telling me, oh, he loves me and this and that. When you knew from the gate that he was already married. So you contributed and saying to that morally wrong thing that he done. You know? And then with his ad that's out there, and I look at his ad as, if you know Tiger Woods, his dad was a very influential person in his life.
Yes, he was.
No, not yeah. Nike's using it and saying to make money off of, but in saying by him and his mom agreeing to this, Tiger is saying something. You know, I need that voice. I needed that. And saying I need my father. I'm saying that. I'm saying some words of encouragement from my father. I'm saying, what would he tell me if he was here right now helping me go through this? You know, so that's the way I look at it and saying that message that he's trying to get out there. People say it's creepy, it's eerie, I'm saying, and whatnot, but to understand Tiger Woods is to understand that, I'm saying, he's using, I'm saying, his father, as a way, I'm saying, to try to come back, I'm saying, to the person that he know he really was before his father died. If you know anything about the story itself, you know, Tiger Woods didn't start cheating and doing all that stuff until after his father died in 06. When his father died in 06, that's when, I'm saying, he started talking to the first mistress or whatnot.
So you think he lost his sense of direction after his father died?
Exactly, exactly. You know, just like Michael Jordan did, and saying Michael Jordan lost his sense of direction and sin a little bit when his father died. So he said he quit the game of basketball to go on to do other things for a little while to try to clear his head and sin to come back. Tiger couldn't do that at the time because he was at the top of his game. He couldn't just quit. And everybody would have been in his ear, no, we need you, Tiger. We need you, Tiger. Tiger has done a lot for himself for the PGA Tour itself, period.
Okay.
You know, and all these guys that are out there on the course, you know, they say we don't like Tiger. And said he did this, he did that. But in saying, how many of those guys right now, and saying secretly, are doing the same thing that he's done?
Right, right, right.
Well, that's probably very true. They just haven't got caught yet.
Exactly.
And they probably don't have 13 women because, you know, they're not Tiger Woods. I mean, most people don't have 13 women. Don't you think that was extreme, though? Well, we don't really know if there's really 13. We just know allegedly there are 13 because Tiger has never admitted to how many it was. But
right.
If it was 13, doesn't that seem extreme for any person?
Yeah, yes, it is extreme, Sam, for one person, but it's – Tiger is an extraordinary person. He has all this money. So people who saying when you're out there in the business and that person said that you in love with or your better half is not there with you, then you saying you kinda get influenced to do other things and saying that everybody else is doing when you're around that scene. You know, so you have to saying to be able to keep yourself positive and surrounded by positive people. And at that time he was living a millionaire's dream. A billionaire's dream.
Exactly. And you know what? It may have just been that simple. You know, I think he said something at one time that he felt like he was entitled to it. And so maybe because you, I, and Chris haven't got the billionaire status, we don't know what it feels like when you have it like that. Maybe you do feel entitled to whatever your desires may be. You know, right or wrong, you just may feel like, you know, I got enough money, I can do it.
Yep.
Right? Because temptation sin is out there. It's always out there.
For broke or rich, it really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? But he just had the opportunity to do those things, you know, and saying instead of somebody being there for Tiger in Tiger's ear, like, Tiger, no, you don't need to be doing this. You need to be at home with Elon. You need to be at home with your family. You know, they had him doing all these interviews, going to all these parties. And then when you go to all these parties, alcohol and all that is involved. You know, so everybody else is doing it, you're doing it, and saying it, then pretty soon you can't even stop yourself from doing saying the other things that come along with it. People have started to prey on these women. I kind of say they feel like they're the victim. In some way, Tiger is the victim because they did prey on him a little bit because they knew his situation. They knew what the type of person he was. They said they wanted to get close and said, maybe Tiger will leave his wife for me and said, just so I can get a piece of the pie.
You know what, Chris? I think he wrapped it up for us on this Tiger Woods story. You know what? Thank you so much for calling in because you're the kind of callers we want to hear from on Center Stage.
And I will be calling.
What's that name again?
What was your name again?
My name is Drill. And saying for the show, we'll call me Drill for this show.
Okay, we got Drill for you. Okay, we want Drill to call in again, don't we, Chris?
Yes, we do.
Okay, Drill, next time, okay?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
All right,
you're welcome.
Bye-bye. Wow. You're talking about insightful.
Very insightful.
That young man is not playing what he is. Oh, my God. You know what? Y'all, with Tiger Woods, that's all we can say. We're going to take another caller. We got 214-564 on the line. Welcome to Center Stage. Let's see. Okay. Welcome to Center Stage. Uh-oh. Welcome to Center Stage. We're going to have to come back to that caller because for some reason we're having some technical difficulties. Okay, so anyway, moving on from Tiger Woods, I kind of enjoyed that the Tiger Woods topic. Excuse me, y'all, I think I got all into that one. Okay, Chris, let's go over into this story about the evangelist on trial in Alabama. Now, that was weird. I mean, I'm sorry, that was just weird. This guy has been called the freezer murder. This has been called the freezer murder. The evangelist was on trial in Alabama for the death of his wife. Traveling evangelist Anthony Hopkins, 39, delivered sermons in rural southern towns where he preached and was sometimes called psychic or even prophet. Hopkins was arrested in 2008 while preaching a rural revival in Clark County. A teenage relative, allegedly pregnant with his baby, led police to the body of his 36-year-old wife, Arletha Hopkins, mother of eight. It appears in 2004, Hopkins killed his wife after she caught him having sex with a female relative, then stuffed her body into the freezer at their mobile home he shared with her six children and two stepchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, where do we begin there? Where do we begin?
You know that relative was his daughter. That was their daughter.
Their daughter?
Yes.
Whoa.
In the bedroom, catches him. He had reportedly been molesting her since she was 11.
Ooh.
Okay, this guy is a piece of dirt. All right? I have nothing yet. So first of all, the wrong person was stuffed inside that freezer, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to agree with you on that one. This guy, he was found guilty on several counts: murder, rape, sodomy, sex abuse, and incest. I mean, wow. I mean, how can you be a preacher and then carry on this way? I mean, I don't know how to wrap my mind around.
That's one of the greatest betrayals to mankind. When you see a preacher go bad, when you see a cop go bad.
But you know what, though?
These entities where people put their trust in the most. And you have some percentage of them that are just in it to do just the opposite of what they're supposed to do.
Well, you know what? I guess let's just say he was bad. But why were the other preachers allowing him to come to their congregations and preach to their congregations? You know, it looks like a preacher should have some degree of discernment. So they should have been, on some level, able to see this guy is not what he is saying he is. You know, they were calling this guy a prophet that had psychic abilities. Well, if you are, you know, anybody who reads the Bible at all, you'll know that psychic and prophet don't even go together.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, and so I'm a little confused as to how they were, I don't know, booking him to come to the church, because were they using him to, I guess, fill up the church, doing revivals and things like that? Because he seemed more like a trickster than he did a preacher or prophet.
Yeah, he was a trickster. Anybody with that type of record, you know, you got a lot of these Reverend Chicken Bones, or Reverend Fried Chicken, Reverend Hog Maw, Reverend Chitlins, they're running around, and they're kings of their own little kingdom.
God, Chris, that's one way. But, and you know what, and you're right.
They're in that position because they, out in the world, they would be nothing.
And you know, you know what, I have said before, that the church, the reason that the church is so popular is because that's the only place a maid can be an evangelist or a missionary or a preacher.
Exactly. You can be a nobody out in the street, but
come to God's house and you can be whatever you want to be.
Right, exactly. We have one in Buffalo, and I'll tell you, this is a brief story. This individual has two rape charges. I may have written about this, but it was in, I did it one time in a local paper. He had two rape charges in two different states, and he was on he was on the radio station. The radio station kept him on, even throughout the whole court proceeding.
So he was paying.
Exactly. That's all they wanted to know.
Mm.
Okay, so I speculated. I'm like, well, you know, a lot of these women, they're lonely. A lot of you know, how many lonely church women are? How many lonely women are faithful church members?
I think the church is full of them.
Yeah. Now, some of these women probably invite him to dinner or whatever the case may be. You know what I'm saying? They may or may not have kids. He goes there, and he's like, well, I'm just here to help the lonely, worldly women and help her with her needs.
And pray for her that the guy keeps her flesh.
Yeah. Sister Sarah, that's some fine chicken you just made. And pass that potato salad. Give me another round of that lemonade.
And I think that church women have a responsibility to not look to the preacher for everything. He's not God. He's just a preacher. He's just a messenger.
Right.
But I think so often they're so lonely when they go to church and they're so broken that certain preachers can preach just any kind of message. And I don't know, for whatever reason, they're looking at the preacher and not what he's supposed to do, what his job is, just to bring the message.
Sure. See, and I understand a certain extent. I respect preachers that are real, that do things, that, like, they have outreach programs and they're trying to help people you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
within the church, whatever, you know, you might have a reverend over, he might be having an affair with maybe one sister in a congregation, whatever. I can understand that. But these guys that's abusing it, and especially the ones that are molesting kids, and you hear a lot about that with the Catholic Church and Jehovah's Witnesses today. No. That's
a whole thing.
Now you're talking about criminal activity.
You know what? Speaking of this Alabama, going back to this Alabama preacher for a second,
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, with all these kids in the house, how is it that these children living in a mobile home with this guy did not ever know that their mother was dead in the freezer? Did he have that much control over them? That he said, like, don't ever touch that freezer, and nobody ever went in the freezer and saw that the mother was in there?
A lot of these guys are quite the control freaks, Gary.
That's scary by itself. I mean, if you see the picture of this guy,
I remember somebody coming up, somebody's parents I know, they had a lock on the freezer.
Ooh.
The refrigerator and freezer. I can't remember exactly who it was, but they had a lock on the refrigerator and freezer. It could have been somebody in that freezer. I don't know.
And you know what? If you look at this guy's picture, this guy's eyes are just piercing. And they said he was staring at the jury pool like that. You know, I don't know why sometimes people like that can suck people in, but
I wish I were on that jury.
You know, I do too. And I just wonder, though, too, why did this teenage relative take so long to lead authorities to the body if she knew about it? You know, because, you know, if he molested you and he's abusing you and you know about this, you know, anybody with any kind of common sense would know that's enough to get somebody put in jail. Or did he instill such fear in them that they were afraid to come forward and tell what had happened?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I'm scratching my head on this one because I'm just such a radical person. I could just see myself running away and going to tell somebody, but you just never know what kind of mind control this guy used because, you know, of course, they're saying he has these psychic abilities. So maybe he could see, you know, way ahead of them and be able to, you know, head them off before they could even think of doing anything against him. I don't know. But one more point I wanted to hit on that. This particular guy was also in the military.
Mm-hmm.
In some kind of way, he had been AWOL for years. Why didn't our military catch up with him and say, hey, wait a minute, guy, you know, are AWOL, and we're going to...
If you can do AWOL, what war or what campaign was he AWOL from? What era?
Did mention it, and I did not write the details on that, but he was, I think it was like somewhere between the 2000... During the time that some of these allegations were going on, you know, the fact that he was raping and killing people, he was AWOL from the military. So if the military caught up with him and put him in jail for being AWOL, some of this may have not even happened. We'll never know. We will never know. We got another caller on the line. Let's go back to the phone line, 214-564. We're going to try you again. Sorry if I dropped you earlier.
Hey, Ms. Karen. Hey, Ms. Karen, how you doing?
How you doing?
I am doing good. I'm actually in the car riding, and I just wanted to call you to tell you, just want to support you and everything. I've been listening to the show. I'm really enjoying the show, Karen, and I believe that you and Chris is doing an excellent job, and y'all going to go a long way with that show.
Wonderful. Chris, you hear that?
Oh, wow. Okay, that's
yeah. Super wrong. Y'all really do need to chop that show around to some major networks. Y'all are very good at what y'all do.
You know what? You know what? From your mouth to God's ears, we are, you know what? We're just out here putting it out there how we feel, and if someone else wants to pick us up, we're ready, aren't we, Chris?
Oh, yeah, we're ready.
We're ready. Well, Dunny B, did you want to weigh in on any of the stories that we talked about?
No, I just want to comment on how good of a job y'all doing. I'm on my way to my church for... But I just wanted to kind of wave in and just comment on how y'all was doing.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dunny B.
All right, then. Love y'all.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow. And so, you know what? That evangelist out of Alabama, I think the jury saw straight through him. And even though he has those piercing and scary eyes, I think they said, you know what? There is a jail cell waiting for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to be very interested to see.
That shows you he's got a lot of that self-righteousness that, you know.
I think that's the situation.
You probably can't tell him nothing. But well, people are be telling somebody's gonna be telling him what to do for the rest of his life.
You know what you know what you got a point. I mean, and you know what? And when you get to jail, for those that don't know, if you have been a child molester, the other inmates are very mean to you. We'll put it that way. And so this guy has got a rough road ahead of him when he goes into prison, and these people know that he's molested and, you know, sodomized children and been a real bad ass on the street. He's going to meet his match in prison. So we're going to move on, but we're going to keep on top of that story as it develops. Also, what about the 5 charged in the gang rape of that 7-year-old out of Trenton, New Jersey, Chris?
That's horrible. That is horrible. And that's something I think I have to put on the parents.
You think they
how are they raising your kids? How are they raising these kids?
This is true. I'm going to run it down a little bit for those that may have not heard about this story. 2 adults and 3 juveniles were charged with a gang rape of a 7-year-old. It took place in a high-rise called Rowan Towers. It appears that a 13, 14, 17, 19, and 20-year-old were charged in this crime. It appears that the older sister went to a party. She's a stepsister. Went to a party with these guys there, and she had sex for money, from what I understand, with a 20-year-old. And then she decided in order to get some more money, she would just have them touch her sister. But some kind of way the touching got out of control, and they gang raped the little sister. Found that story just sad. I mean,
How old was she again, Carrie?
How old was the stepsister or the younger sister?
The younger sister.
The younger sister was 7 years old.
And I'm saying that because I want people to understand this. I want people to hear this. You understand? This is nothing to sneeze at.
Oh, no.
That is the most despicable thing going around. And what was going through the older sister's mind when this was going on? What's on her mind? Who are the parents?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we got a lot of issues going on with here.
But was this some learned behavior, though? You know, a lot of times people, you know, will assume that somebody just, you know, learned this from school. But sometimes that learned behavior can come straight from the home. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, the mother or the auntie or something. Because why was a 15-year-old so prone to not only sell herself but then sell her younger sister? You know, what about that said that was okay to her? What about that that she didn't even have a conscience and any remorse about doing it? That speaks volumes to the environment that she's living in, not just the high rise, but what's going on within the home.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you can instill values in your children irregardless of where they live. You know what I'm saying? You can still say, you know what, we may be poor, but we got pride. You know, we may not have the best clothes and we may not have the best food, but y'all in this house, you know, we going to serve God or we going to, you know, live like people who got some self-respect. And so I'm wondering if in this family that was lacking.
There's people in Haiti with more pride than that.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse.
Yeah.
Poverty is never an excuse.
Yeah.
Don't tell me, well, you know, nothing here and everybody else is doing it. I've never listened to that. That's the number one ghetto excuse for doing everything. Everybody else is doing it. You know, this is what happens down here. What's that? That explains nothing about you individually.
Very true. Nothing. Well, tell me this: what causes us? And you know, I'm not going to try to speak for Hispanics today, or Italians, or any other race. I'm just talking about Black people. What causes us to be so violent toward each other? I mean, all of these people involved that did this gang raping had to know this was wrong.
Right.
You know,
because I think today a lot youth today view violence differently than in my day. Today youth are told, they're more or less told that violence is the end thing. It's like a fashion statement.
Wow.
To act violent and talk violent and do really foul, gross things. You know, because look what they're exposed to. And I think hardcore rap is the first thing that exposed them to this. Hardcore rap was nothing more. A lot of people don't realize this. Hardcore rap or gangster rap or whatever it is you want to call it, with this type of rap music, which is constantly repetitively uses the B word or the N word, that was done as a retaliatory instrument against what was called political rap.
Mm.
Back in the early days of rap, when you had
NWA.
Even before NWA was pretty good, but But they weren't like that. They didn't cheapen. Again, NWA just told you what was going on in the streets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a famous public enemy. So public enemy was, you know, fight the power.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ice-T, cop killer. So now you have, after that, recording industry suits met, you know, they met each other in their smoking rooms, and they said, we got to stop them from talking about us and get them to talking about each other. That's when gangster rap was created. It wasn't really people. A lot of people blame NWA. No, blame what happened after NWA.
Wow.
The breakup of NWA is what led to it, because that's when people like Suge Knight took over some of these guys, and he brought into the confrontational thing. He started his little war against Sean P. Diddy, whatever.
Yeah.
Then you had Tupac and Biggie, the feud people try to spark between them, and all other types of rap feuds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what told kids, yeah, hating each other is in. Okay? They forgot all about hating the enemy, the real enemy.
But you know what? All of that aside, you as a parent are in control of what you allow to come in your house and what you buy for your children. I think wasn't there a Japanese video game that they recently pulled where it was teaching people how to rape?
I never heard of that one.
That was in the news this week. Some Japanese video game where they were teaching them to rape. I mean, this is nonsense, people. I mean, in my opinion, there should never be any time in your lifespan where you will allow your child to bring that kind of garbage into the house. And so I think if you allow your child to feed their mind on negativity, on games like that, the wrong crowd, I think there's nothing that you can create from that but a monster.
Right.
And so, you know, I just feel that this family needs to account to law enforcement as to why this 15-year-old did what she did, and was some of this behavior learned from some incest that was maybe inside her own home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it looks like the community members out there are having an anti-violence rally today. They're hoping to bring attention to sexual violence committed against children in urban communities. So obviously it's happening more often than we realize.
Oh, yeah, very true.
You know, and so I think that's a very positive thing, and maybe it needs to be taught in the schools, maybe it needs to be taught in the church, maybe everywhere kids gather, community centers, we need to talk about, you know, self-respect and other people's property, including their bodies. You should know how to conduct yourself as a man or woman, boy or girl, you know, and it's just certain behaviors that are just not acceptable. And I'm just thinking that whatever was going on with this group of guys that did this, was it alcohol involved? Was it peer pressure? What caused all of them? You know, because typically it's one or two guys say, look, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I'm out. But what made five people decide to do that to a seven-year-old? You know, what happened?
Well, your mind is in a place of degradation that hasn't been reached by most people.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, it's at a very low point. It's an extremely low point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hear the word desensitized or desensitization or whatever being thrown around.
Mm-hmm.
This is even much deeper than that.
Right.
This is much worse than that.
One of our callers has got their hand up. They want to weigh in on this. Let's go back to the phone lines. 217-819. We're coming to you. Okay, you're on the center stage.
That situation, Sin, is a very unfortunate situation, you know.
Very much so.
I can't even say too much about it because, Sin, I don't condone that at all. That's just morally wrong, Sin, and you just, I'm saying, these guys, you know what I'm saying, they probably just don't have anything at home. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can't really speak for them or stand up for them, saying on how they were thinking, you know. But I'm saying it, but when I'm saying in that moment, I'm saying once them saying they started with them, saying the older sister, I'm saying they couldn't control themselves, and saying and they went on saying and took it further, you know. I'm saying the older guy.
It may have been some maybe drugs and alcohol involved, and then it just got out of control.
Exactly, I'm saying it had to have, because I'm saying I wouldn't see him saying guys sober like that, even having that even thought in their heads, I'm saying to want to even saying to molest a person like that, or even treat a human being like that. You know,
I mean, these guys are going to have rap sheets they don't realize is going to have them as pedophiles for the rest of their life. You know, anytime
exactly.
you commit a crime against a child like that, that puts that stigma on you. I forgot what they call that when they whenever you're entered back into society, they you have to check in as a sex offender, and,
yep.
and everybody in the community knows that you're a sex offender. You know, obviously none of this was thought about before. That, you know, this was some serious stuff that they were getting themselves into, or maybe this was something that they had done before and didn't think anything was going to happen. They weren't going to get caught.
Yeah, true. You know, it's, but it all, I'm saying, like Chris said, it starts at home. You know what I'm saying? What were the parents at when all this was happening? I'm saying, why was them saying the 14-year-old even toting the 7-year-old around like that and saying amongst them saying other people? You know, she should be at home saying taking care of that child at home, and you know, I'm saying being that I'm saying that older person, that role model, I'm saying, for that little child.
But you know, the 7-year-old's life is ruined forever. I
forever.
Mean, no matter how they try to help her, that's going to be, I mean, that's traumatizing. I mean, a rape is traumatizing for an adult woman, let alone a child, you know. And then when someone that is supposed to be caring for you, you know, turns you over so that you can be treated like that, you have to wonder then about her safety net and will she ever feel safe again, you know,
yeah,
because if your caretakers, you know, don't take care of you, who can you believe in?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I you know, my prayers go out to that little girl because I know that, you know, God sits high, he looks low. You know, why he allowed it, we'll never know. But maybe some kind of way something good will come out of this. Don't know how, but maybe something good will come out of it. Maybe these guys will be taken off the streets. Maybe that oldest one will get life in prison, you know, and maybe once they get to jail, they'll see what it's like to rape somebody and or get raped by somebody. And so maybe that's the light at the end of the tunnel on this story, that these five guys will no longer be on the streets to do this to anybody else.
Right. I think that project, you said, community, you know what I'm saying, is probably what was a problem anyways, you know what I'm saying? It was just something to bring light upon, saying what the community, I'm saying, and what the state needs to do, you know, to clear all that up, and saying, and make that a better neighborhood for others to live in.
You're right. Maybe this is, you're right. Maybe this kind of crime in that area was so rampant that maybe this was just going to be the catalyst that's going to put this spotlight on this particular situation, and maybe the local government and the local authorities will do something about it. Well, 217, thank you for calling us again. Okay, we're going to move on and try to wrap this up, y'all. Chris,
yeah.
We've had a lot of topics that we discussed today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, this has been a crazy week for the news. I mean, you know, who knows how these stories are going to turn out. I think, you know, maybe with the Tiger story, he may end up winning the Masters. And I think that's going to be the only thing that's going to quiet, you know, the haters. And so I think Tiger, you know, like you said, may pull it off.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Did you say this was his best round, his best opening round ever?
In the Masters.
Okay. Ooh, well, we'll see. I think the we could talk about just a little while. I wanted to cover. I forgot that last story I wanted to talk about. In South Africa, the white supremacist that was slain by two black people that's causing so much racial tension out there.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like there was South Africa's most notorious white supremacist was killed by two black farm workers over a wage dispute, and that is setting off racial tensions. It appears that this country is like 10 weeks from hosting soccer's World Cup, and their president, President Jacob Zuma, is appealing for calm because I think he's realizing that, you know, if this thing jumps off just before the Soccer World Cup comes there, they're not coming. You know, so I wonder if the whole racial tension thing in South Africa is just not something that's, you know, isolated to South Africa. Do you think racial tensions is just kind of off the chain everywhere right now?
I think so, but, you know, South Africa is interesting because this is the first racial tension I've heard of since you know, apartheid, basically, you know, and what's going on here in South Africa, you know, like I say, you have that, this is the World Cup coming up. African soccer has always been terribly underfunded, you know, so because you got a lot of great black African soccer teams. I remember the last really good one that I remember was a Cameroon team that was during the late 80s. And I think they got to the final eight, the quarterfinals, whatever, but several of their key players got suspended on a penalty or whatever and couldn't play in their final game. But this is a big chance right here for them to come back. Big year. They're the host country. You know, no doubt they got a great team. And this incident takes place. It's bad, but on the other hand, I can understand, you know, these guys were underpaid, like you said, or they were not being paid at all.
Mm-hmm. And I think because he was a white supremacist, they're trying to make it about race. But the president is saying this was not about race, y'all. This was about the fact that two workers said it was a wage dispute going on. And the fact that Mr. Terry Blanchy had not done right by them as far as their wages was concerned. But I think because he was a white supremacist and the people that follow in his little group, they're upset because two black people killed a white person. And so they're trying to, I guess, let it jump off over there. But I don't, you know, I just feel like that's kind of a wave going on with those kind of groups across the world. It seems like they're so angry. They're kind of fighting change. And so every little thing incites them.
Oh, yeah. You know, white supremacy has been going on anyway because it's American-influenced hate towards black people. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The white people that came, our founding fathers descended from felons. They disgruntled Europeans. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's why you had so much criminal activity as slavery and lynching, because we didn't get the best of the European crop. We got the worst.
Mm.
Okay, so if you notice the contrast, we usually when black Americans traveled to Europe, they were treated royally.
Right.
All right, that's because those people were good. Those were good European people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got the disgruntled ones. We got the malcontent. And it showed, and it still shows today, okay? But what throws people off is that we're taught to honor these founding fathers, as they're called.
Yeah.
But they were founding felons in my mind.
and that's a very interesting way to put that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, there's been a lot of. You know, they have to understand all those white supremacists and white people who are complaining about that now need to remember how many apartheid-era white supremacists are in prison. You know, murderers who are in prison in South Africa right now. Okay, so it's not going to work. Revenge is not going to work. This guy did something that it may have been illegal, but he had it coming to him. All right? You know, and he's 69 years old. He was bludgeoned. He was stabbed to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really went after him.
And they said this guy was a bad guy. Terry Blanchy was somebody, the one that was killed, was somebody who had fought change and black people coming up in South Africa for a while. I mean, he had been even jailed for some of the things that he had done to fight change over there. So this guy, you know, it's sad that they bludgeoned him to death, but he really was not a good character. You know, and he seemed like he had just really fought tooth and nail to keep black people down. So it's unfortunate he died like he did, but maybe it was a good thing, you know, that was just handled in a bad way. Because, you know, well, we're going to close, y'all. We're come to the end of Center Stage. That hour rolled up on me so fast, Chris, I didn't even know it. God, thank you guys for tuning in to Center Stage. This is Carrie Hines and my co-host, Chris Stevenson, saying good evening. And we hope you catch us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com/Center Stage. We'll see you guys next time.
See you next week.